Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.
Now it's time for this.
News Talk's Executive Chair.
And I'm delighted to bring you an Executive Chair with a difference this week, because I'm at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre and I'm about to meet the General Manager of the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre, Mr. Stephen Falloon. Stephen, you're very welcome to the Executive Chair.
Thank you very much for having me, Bobby. And thank you for coming in and seeing the beautiful, salubrious surroundings of the wonderful Bord Gáis Energy Theatre.
Well, I had an interesting trip up on the lift. I was in with people from costumes. There was obviously some sort of audition going on because people were singing in the lift. And it was all very colourful. And I just said, this is a great place. We'll come to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre in a minute, Stephen. But I want to bring you back to a small village in County Tyrone where you grew up. Tell us a little bit about your early days.
Sure. Well, I was born in 1971 in Donoghmore, County Tyrone, the height of the Irish Troubles, and grew up there. And when I was a child, my dad and uncle, particularly my uncle Sean, who's still with us today, started a theatre group called the Bardic Theatre. Lovely little theatre group that's still there today, a village of 800 people. It actually now has its own theatre, which can take 250 people with a mini fly system and stuff. It's a really brilliant, should not be in the village of its size. So I got that theatre bug from that very early age. I was first in Oliver in 1982 with the Bardic Theatre. Probably wasn't the right size to be playing a malnourished young kid because I was a big lad. But that was my first foray. I realised I was also in Blood Brothers, Joseph. Did a lot of shows for them and then started acting for my father because my father was an amateur director as well too. And did a play called The Bespoke Overcoat, which toured all around the All-Ireland circuit and came second in the All-Ireland Amateur One-Act Finals. So theatre's in my blood.
So you were always destined for theatre, and your route to where you are now brought you to Trinity, brought you to UCD, but I presume in those years even you were acting and you were doing stuff, you were on the stage. You never quite left theatre.
Yeah, no, to be clear, I'm a bad actor. So I have to say that completely, in case anybody has misconstrued that I can actually act, I can't. There's a reason why I'm backstage. So I finished college. But yeah, when I was in Trinity, I was involved in players. And then when I went to UCD, I did arts management, did my master's there. But when I graduated in 1996, it was really weird because, you know, there was no jobs in the arts. The only way that you could get a job in the arts was actually going on a community employment scheme, which was for people who were unemployed. So when I graduated, I had to go on the dole for a year before I could get a job in the arts. So that meant then I you know, wasn't unfortunately able to go to the arts for a while because I needed to make money. So I've had a varied career working in places such as the Dublin Dental Hospital, Golden Pages, and an internet startup company from Ercom called Local Ireland. So yeah, I've had a very varied and mad career.
And those kind of tough days of where, you know, you need to work somewhere maybe that you're not career focused in order to sort of fund your quest for the arts. That's common to a lot of people in this industry, isn't it?
Even so today, you know, like, I mean, I feel for actors, you know, it's such a precarious profession. You know, you can be employed one day and then not employed for 2 years, you know, and there's a lot of, you know, work that you have to do and auditions and stuff like that. It is, I mean, this profession is not for everybody. The one thing I will say, it's a vocation. You know, those that want to do it, they do it because they love it.
And do you get used to dealing with the insecurity of it all? That does... Or does that ever become normalised?
Well, I think we all have imposter syndrome. So, you know, and I think all actors have imposter syndrome. Even the big actors still think they got, you know, it could all go any day. So, yeah, it's always there, but it's just something that you learn to deal with. And I suppose in a way, imposter syndrome is a really good thing because it propels us forward. Yeah. It keeps us pushing and moving on and keeps us being better.
You found yourself then, I'm not sure if this was the first kind of real theatre job, in Dundrum.
Yes.
Again, a wonderful institution. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'd been, full disclosure, when I was in Golden Pages, I was also running a comedy club, so I was still keeping my toe and fingers and thumbs in the arts. But yeah, the Mill Theatre job came up. Dundrum Town Centre opened in 2006, and the theatre opened just after it, about 6 months. And they took a punt on me because I hadn't worked in theatre, you know, full time. And but I had, I think they thought that I had a business acumen and also I'd do anything to get into it, and which I did. So the Mill Theatre was like, it's a brilliant theatre, still running today, it's nearly 20 years old. But I would be working, you know, as well as running the theatre, I would be working the box office, I'd be working the bar, I'd be doing technician, because we had no money. Yeah. So you'd have to do anything just to keep the place open. But it's really developed, and I was producing for it as well too, but it's really developed. It was the most brilliant learning curve and training ground for all aspects of theatre, so that when I applied for the job here, you know, I knew every facet of what running a theatre involves.
And that was involved in hands-on, grounded management, because you did it because you had to do it. You had to keep the lights on. So you got this education in business, in art, in craft. And then you were, as you say, fortunate to be appointed from day one here. You were involved before it even opened.
Yeah, so I started here in September 2009 before we opened in March 2010. I'm going to talk about that in a while. And I remember when, you know, so this area, I remember attending my first couple of interviews. Nobody really knew this area. This area didn't really exist because it was all wasteland. There was a couple of restaurants open. The Marker Hotel was built, but it not opened. So it was a real sort of weird area. And I remember going, God, is this really going to work? Is this going to happen? You know, it's, you know, and especially because back then in 2009, we were in the midst of the Celtic Depression recession. So I was quite surprised, A, that I got the job, and B, that we got it open, and then C, that we really developed and grew it and became the success that it is today.
Often businesses that start in a recession are the most resilient, you know, when the next recession comes, in terms of you opened this business in 2008, was it?
No, 2010.
Even worse.
That's even worse.
So, you know, you get blooded from that. Like, that was when we, you know, the lights were gone out, the IMF were in town.
Yes.
You know, people were cutting back on their spending.
Yes.
So, you know, your antenna in terms of offering low-cost productions, value for money tickets, like your A game must have been right up there to make sure that people came, even though they weren't paying you maybe as much as you needed to be paid.
Yeah, so I mean, it's really, because first of all, I had a great boss in Mike Adamson, CEO of Live Nation, who was an inspiration and still is today in sort of pushing me forward. But back then, what was really interesting was, you know, this because it was Mike's idea to build the theatre, it was all about bringing the West End and Broadway to Dublin, who have not really been able to do it before, because the Getty's a great theatre, but it didn't have the amount of seats to make it economically viable. But we did open in the middle of the recession, and the producers at that time, you know, because at that time, you know, the Guardian, the English Independent, the front pages were Ireland Inc. is closed for business. Yeah. So the producers were like, yeah, no, you know, I use of no money, and there's no point in us coming over here. And I remember,
and if we go over, will we get paid?
And will we get paid? And I remember finally persuading a producer to come over, and I brought him out for lunch to the old Eli, which is on the square. And the first note, the first thing he said was, God, there's people still eating. You know, I thought all the restaurants would be closed. You know, and so that was their perception of Ireland, that Ireland was like dust and, you know, literally in the grave. So finally, over time, we were able to persuade, like we had, I think the first show that really changed us was Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, which came in our first summer in August 2010 and did 90% business. And the producer was like, oh my God, it does work. And he started spreading the word, and we started being able to pick the shows to come, and it's really developed from there. But one of the really interesting things, just, I know I'm going on a lot, but we had to keep pricing very clever, you know, because we had to make it affordable. Nobody had a lot of money. People still wanted treats. We wanted to be the treat that people would have. So we had to be very clever about our pricing. And I think it worked really well to make it affordable. And that still follows through today, 15 years later.
Stephen, we talked about the early days. We talked about getting open in 2010. We talked about pricing strategy. When we look today here, we're in the Circle Club. We're looking out across the water here in Grand Canal Dock. This is an amazing building, isn't it?
It really is. Daniel Liebeskind was the architect, and like he's done, you know, Ground Zero in New York. He's done stuff in Berlin. He's a world famous, or we call him a starchitect. And he really did a beautiful job. And we're sitting here in the Circle Club on the second floor, and we're looking out at the water of the Grand Canal Basin. And the feeling that you're meant to have, and I totally get it, is that you're on a cruise ship, yeah. You know, watching the world go by, just sitting, you know, with the low ceilings, the beautiful big high windows. It's a really, really stunning room. And again, I mean, it's such a modern, contemporary, beautiful theatre. It's always something that I've thought that Dublin and Ireland could be very proud of. And that sort of filters through us as a team,
yeah.
Because we consider ourselves the best theatre in Ireland, so that all our work is always about being the best, and not only in Ireland, but also in Europe.
And your original vision of being, I suppose, connected to the West End, has that worked out for you in terms of being a platform for the West End here in Ireland or in Dublin?
Yeah, so it completely has worked out. And it's not just the West End, but it's also Broadway as well too. And we've been able to really develop and grow our programme, because there's, you know, some shows come out such as Lion King, Wicked. They come out in tour and we're part of that tour for them. But there's other shows such as Moulin Rouge, which is coming this Christmas, which is part of a world tour, not just going to the UK. But then also we just had, you know, which was a fantastic feat, was having Dr. Strangelove in February. So Dr. Strangelove played 4 months in the West End and then came to Dublin at the end of its run, going nowhere else. Maybe it'll go to Broadway, we hope, starring Steve Coogan. But it was a great, you know, compliment that we're now on that stage, that we are part of that story.
How do you decide, and this is probably the commercial piece, how do you decide how long a show is going to run for, how much you charge, like what are the maths around making sure you make a few quid on every production?
Well, I mean, you know, you develop relationships with producers over the years that, you know, there has to be a sort of honesty with producers on how much their show costs. You know, obviously, and certainly coming over to Dublin post-Brexit has become a lot more expensive. Okay. And, you know, and also there's different rules here because they have to, accommodation has become more expensive. So you always have to take those factors in. So it's an honest conversation with the producer about figuring out, well, what do we do to at least break even and hopefully make a few euro for both the producer and the theatre? But also keeping in mind that affordability thing. You know, like we were really proud, Dr. Strangelove, the top price in London was £250. Here it was €85.
And is it a profit share that you're doing with, or does it vary from gig to gig?
It varies from gig to gig, but our favourite deal is a profit share, right. You know, where we do what we call a box office split. So the producer would get a percentage and then we would get a percentage.
Okay.
And then we take on the burden, not the burden, we love doing it, but we also love marketing and promoting the shows and finding its audience. It's something, we have a great team of people here headed up by Claire that really work to just actually generate that audience for the show. And producers, brilliantly, after 15 years, trust us in order to do that.
And when you're looking at your pipeline and you're looking at your, how far out are you looking? Like, when do you know that the next big show is coming, or are you working 2 or 3 years ahead?
Oh God, well, actually, we literally got an email in this morning about a show in 2029.
Wow.
And actually looking at a schedule for that show in 2029. So it's, you know, you're always working, you know, up to 4 years ahead, but really primarily like 26 is pretty much done. There's only a few little shows to fill. 27 is looking really good. So it's always at least a year, maybe two, maybe three, maybe four. It's always there. It's always this little pot boiling over that you're just trying to make it work.
Finally, can I ask you about other events, other maybe that aren't productions, that aren't stage shows? Are they a part of the mix?
Oh, absolutely.
So conferences, I don't know, weddings, yeah. Bar mitzvahs.
No, yeah.
You don't have to go down. You don't have to go down into that, yeah. Into that bun fight.
No, we don't do that. No, we are a theatre, yeah. And that's our business. And actually, in the early days, we did do a bit of that because we had to. But now we are now absolutely 100% a theatre, and in fact, like, you know, we're always growing and developing. Like, we have lovely Lul, the new national dance company, are having the world premiere of their first ever production. That's going to be here in May. But also, we're going to maybe change things a little bit too, because we're doing our own co-production. We're actually producing our own show with TheatreWorks in the form of The Little Shop of Horrors coming in July, which is a new venture for us. And that's about celebrating the brilliance and breadth and depth of Irish talent that hitherto had to go to the West End to get a gig. So we're bringing them home to pair them to actually celebrate the brilliance of our own country.
Finally, Stephen, we always like to ask our guests to tell us something that we didn't know about them. And you were very candid in your submission to us. You told us that you don't know how to tie your own shoelaces. Tell us more.
I cannot believe that I said that, Bobby. And I can't believe that on national radio. It's not that I can't. I do know how to tie my laces, but I didn't think my mother will kill me for this. I didn't learn, because I was quite stubborn, until I was about 11 or 12. So I was used to always having my laces open. And so through adult life, I have always been not that great in tying my laces. And this can cause, like if I was in a restaurant a few weeks ago, just ordering something for lunch, And the manager came up and said, "Sorry, your laces are untied." I was like, "Yeah, thanks." And she got quite upset. And she was like, "Oh, no, tie them." And I was like, "Oh, no, don't worry about it. Don't worry. Actually, you're grand." And she goes, "Well, can I tie them for you? Because they're really upsetting me." And I was like, "No, you're grand." And she, it was actually this Mexican standoff. It's very embarrassing, but that's my...
Well, Stephen, you've been a great guest. Thanks for your hospitality, showing us around. You're a bubbly personality. You're just what this business needs. Keep doing what you've been doing for another 15 years. And thanks for being our guest on the Executive Chair.
Thanks a million for having me, Bobby. It's been a pleasure.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland
on News Talk.